If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Raphael Warnock wins re-election to the U.S. Senate and Democrats expand their majority. Plus, China eases more of its zero COVID rules, and Vladimir Putin wrestles with the cost of his war in Ukraine and its consequences.
Sanctions plus the lack of workers plus the financing, I think all of that is looking pretty bad for the Russian economy.
It is Wednesday, December 7th. I'm Peter Granitz with the Wall Street Journal, filling in for Luke Vargas. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. China took another step away from its stringent COVID-19 controls. Authorities are easing quarantine and testing requirements and curtailing the power of local officials to shut down entire city blocks. The wide-ranging easing of restrictions announced by the state council will allow COVID patients with mild or no symptoms to isolate at home instead of being shipped off to government quarantine facilities. The move marks a policy shift for China, where last month the biggest demonstrations in decades broke out, with people calling for an end to the restrictions. The U.S. and Australia have agreed to deepen their defense partnership amid concern about China's activity in the Indo-Pacific. Though details are yet to be worked out, the U.S. will deploy more air, land, and sea forces to Australia. The two countries say they will develop airfields in the northern part of the country, and they've also invited Japan to participate in war drills. Beijing has previously said the military buildup in northern Australia could spark an arms race. Incumbent Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock won re-election in a Georgia runoff contest. The Associated Press called the race for Warnock Tuesday night. With 96% of the votes counted, he led by just over 1.5%. He beat Republican Herschel Walker, who had the support of former President Donald Trump. As the Journal's Cameron McWhorter says, the win gives Democrats some breathing room.
Senator Warnock's re-election gives the Democrats a 51-49 majority in the U.S. Senate, slightly increasing their hold on that chamber and giving them a little more leeway.
E-cigarette maker Juul has reached a sweeping legal settlement that covers more than 5,000 lawsuits and about 10,000 individual plaintiffs. The settlement resolved much of the legal uncertainty that had pushed the company to the brink of bankruptcy. The deal settles four broad groups: personal injury plaintiffs, Juul consumers, government entities like school districts, and Native American tribes. A lead counsel for the plaintiffs says the settlement will put meaningful compensation in hands of victims and their families. The company said Tuesday it secured an equity investment to cover the cost of the settlement. And Ramesh Sunny Belwani will be sentenced today. The former president of Theranos was convicted on 12 counts of wire fraud and conspiracy for his role at the now-defunct blood testing startup he ran with Elizabeth Holmes. The biggest driver of inflation is set to ease. The cost of housing, new rents in particular, is coming down. Good news if you're ready to move, but that good news may not register at the Fed for a few months. Joining us from the DC Bureau to tell us why is economics reporter Gwen Guilford. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So what are the numbers? What is happening to housing costs?
So when we're talking about housing costs and when we're dealing with U.S. inflation, we're talking about rent. And so rent for new leases, it shot up in 2021. And it was growing at like this insane pace of 25% from July to September. And then it's calmed down. And rents are now barely growing and they're about to decline on a month-to-month basis. But that is the measure for newly signed rents. And that is not most of what is being captured in the Consumer Price Index, which is that big measure of inflation that gets all the attention.
Is that why we haven't heard Fed Chairman Jay Powell come out and celebrate this just yet?
You could say that. So the rent from new leases, that data tend to lead what we see in CPI by about a year. So a little more than a year ago, we have the market rents, those grow at this crazy pace, and then they're coming down. Now, in the last few months, we've had these like alarmingly high core inflation readings. So that's the sort of underlying inflation. And housing costs are a huge part of that. And they're increasingly the big driver of it because goods prices that have been causing a lot of the early inflation, those are coming down now. So now it's really about housing costs. But the good news is, at least if the CPI data continue to follow the market rent trends, the worst is probably behind us, and we're going to see a steady deceleration in the months to come.
Is the Fed basing its decisions on outdated data?
There's some research and some analysts who say, yes, that's the case. They're working with the data they have. They're well aware of this lag. And this lag hasn't really been a problem before. This is yet another of these data points that have become wildly distorted by crazy things that happened due to the pandemic and the response to the pandemic. And now it is really hard to get like sort of a composite sense of what is happening with inflation versus what is happening with these kind of outlier cost of living swings. That is one of the reasons why the Fed continues to emphasize its focus on many labor market indicators like wages and stuff like that. That's a good signal of how much inflationary pressure is kind of building up at the core of the economy.
That is reporter Gwen Gilford. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And coming up, the war in Ukraine is costly for Russia, and Vladimir Putin has got to retool his economy to pay for it. That's after the break.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Russia has been on a losing streak in Ukraine, losing previously seized land, soldiers, and munitions. And that is forcing Russian President Vladimir Putin to recalibrate his economy to feed the war in Ukraine. Georgi Kanchev has the story. He's a reporter based in Berlin, and he joins us now. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And there is a lot to unpack, and I want to start with a striking figure in your story. Russian defense spending will increase 30% this year. How is that possible?
Well, wars are very expensive, and Russia has been using its missiles and other weaponry and equipment. It has to replenish those. And then, of course, there's the mobilization, which President Putin announced in September. Over 300,000 men were mobilized. So those new draftees, they need equipment, they need clothing and all of that for the front. So Russia had to do it. Now, the question is, of course, how? And one of the reasons Russia was able to increase its defense spending, and it's going to increase it next year as well, is because this year Russia has been benefiting from high energy prices for its oil and gas sales. So it was able to get an influx of revenues, and that is helping the state budget. But of course, that is changing now.
Well, it's changing because the EU has said there's a ban now on seaborne Russian oil imports to the bloc, and the G7 and the EU have limited the price they're willing to pay per barrel for Russian oil. So will Russia have the money to fund the war?
That's a great question, and it's tough to say because it's not very clear how Russia will react to those new curbs. Ultimately, Russia is looking for ways to circumvent those bans and sell more oil to China, to India, which are not part of the oil price cap. But Russia is losing its biggest customer for its oil, the EU, and that will make a difference. It's going to be difficult for Russia to reroute all of its oil supplies. So those new sanctions, which took effect this week, they will certainly have an impact on Russia's budget and Russia's ability to finance the war. What we shouldn't forget as well is that Russia has two goals here. They have to finance the war in Ukraine, but also they have to support local economy, which is in a difficult state, have to placate the population, have to give subsidies. So that's another issue that Russia has to deal with.
On the production side of this, can the private arms companies inside Russia and other manufacturers, can it meet the Russian government's demand for all this war material?
It's difficult because ultimately Russia's military industrial complex, it's quite vast and quite big. But of course, this is an unusual situation. This is a massive war. And Russia has been using up a lot of its armory. So they have to replenish it pretty quickly. And they're doing two things. They're trying to ramp up, on the one hand, military producers, which takes time and effort and money. And there's a lot of inefficiencies in the process. And as well, those companies, they're missing workers as well. That's another problem. At the same time, they're also enlisting private companies. Let's say a company that was making backpacks for children. Now they're making backpacks for soldiers. So that will help on the margins. But what they need really is the weapons. And that takes time and effort.
Georgi, say, I want to step back a bit. I mean, does this public campaign to put the Russian economy on a war footing, does that signify a change?
Yes, absolutely. Because at the beginning of the war, the Kremlin was trying to basically shield the population from the horrors of the war. There was, of course, reporting in the local media and television, but that was through the lens of the propaganda machine. Now, that has changed because ultimately this mobilization of over 300,000 men, that has brought the war into people's homes. So the war now is a subject for the local population. And to some extent, we've seen signs of some erosion of popular support for the war effort and for Putin himself.
Is the Russian economy resilient enough to withstand a long war?
Well, that's the big question, because Russia has been, on the one hand, benefiting from these high energy prices this year. It has a near record current account surplus, and that has definitely helped the economy stabilize despite the sanctions. But sanctions are hitting the economy from various sides. The long-term impact is big. And then, of course, Russia is facing a lack of workers because of the exodus of people during the war months, and especially after the mobilization effort was announced. So that is another problem, the lack of workers, which is not a new problem as well for Russia. It has been going on for years. Russia has experienced a very serious demographic crisis. So now, on top of that, we have this new brain drain that we've seen since the war began. So sanctions, plus the lack of workers, plus the financing, I think all of that is looking pretty bad for the Russian economy in the long term, but also given the needs of the war, the shorter impact is pretty serious as well.
That is reporter Georgi Kanchev. He has been covering the war in Ukraine and its effects on other economies. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And finally, as we heard from Gwyn before, relief may be in sight for new renters. Homeowners, it is a different story. They are shelling out more for mortgage payments, routine maintenance, and heating costs this year as inflation and rising interest rates are straining monthly budgets. Add to that home insurance. Premiums have jumped 9.3% on average since 2021, according to S&P Global Market Intelligence data. But Wall Street Journal personal finance reporter Veronica Dagger says there are ways to trim your bill. First, resist the urge to put your renewal on autopilot and make some calls to other companies to find a better deal. And also, take a good look at the terms of your policy.
You might be able to eliminate some of this coverage that's called other structures, and that might be a bit hidden in your policy or roped in with some of your other coverage. So this is a bucket of coverage that if you don't have a freestanding garage or a shed or a retaining wall or a pool or other items that would fall under this category, you might be able to eliminate it. You need to call up your insurer, ask if they will reduce or eliminate that coverage. Consumers, we're hearing, can shave 1 to 10% off their premium with this move, depending on the insurer and if they will let you cut out that category. Sometimes they don't, but it's worth a phone call.
And that's what's news for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz at The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.